Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, Boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we make old school young again. I'm your host and king of the Boneheads, Ryan Howard, and tonight I am joined by a good friend and one of my fellow compatriots over on the Basic Experts Gilded server, DM Blackwall. He is here again to talk about his recently released game, Horde Wars Basic, which is a D12 role-playing game focused on fighting large quantities of enemies, which if that doesn't sound cool to you, I don't know what you're doing here. But before we get into that, I just want to remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what we do here on Rollin' Bones. And also, you can find me on social media at Howard_RyanGregg on X and Instagram. On YouTube, I am Rollin' Bones. Twitch is twitch.tv/RollinBonesRyan. And Substack is rollinbones.substack.com. Substack is the place to go if you want my unfiltered and often unqualified thoughts on all things role-playing. I don't know if proud is the right word to say, you know, about what I do on Substack, but I do definitely enjoy putting those articles out. And I'm glad, you know, those of you who enjoy reading them, I'm glad that you guys enjoy that. You can also find Rollin' Bones merch over on TeePublic on the Bonehead Emporium. You can find the link both to Substack and TeePublic in chat. And, you know, with that out of the way, that's enough of my shilling. Let's go ahead and bring on the man of the hour, the man with the power, the man who is too sweet to be sour. Ladies and gentlemen, DM Blackwall, welcome to Rollin' Bones.
Thanks. Good to be back. I'm going to post for you in private chat, and I don't know where you want to put it, in the video description or other, or in the comments or whatever, but here is our contact information if anyone has any questions about the game or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's our public-facing email.
Absolutely. I'll go ahead and drop that here in chat, and then those of you who are watching this after the fact, you'll be able to find that email address, hordewars@blackwallgames.com, in the pinned comment in case you have any questions about the system or, you know, want to reach out to DM Blackwall for any particular reason as far as, you know, figuring out how to run this thing goes.
Great. So do you have any questions about the system in general?
Yeah, I think to begin, and I don't want to start off on a confrontational note. So when I say this, you know, this is me trying to give you an opportunity to kind of pitch your game here. But there are so many systems now. There's so many different games out there that people can choose from. So why should someone pick up Horde Wars versus another system?
Well, the design is fast and clean. We've got over 1,000 hours of play testing, which is to say I have had full campaigns run in this system as well as a pile of one-shots. And the combats, when I've played tested this with 5th edition D&D players or older D&D players or Pathfinder players, they're always surprised at how quickly turn order moves, which is a good thing. In a game where we designed it so that our very first playtest session, we had 5 player characters against 30 goblins. And they were able to resolve the combat in under an hour. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty good for level 1 characters. Also, I'm pleasantly surprised they didn't all die.
Yeah, that's definitely something that speaks to me from a design standpoint. I love the fact that This game is built with the idea of you're going to be fighting a lot of people at once, because, you know, so much of the fantasy that we consume involves these kind of unstoppable characters who take on, you know, large chunks of enemies. And even, you know, like in video games, the Dynasty Warriors series is very popular. Berserk is very popular. You have a lot of this media that's built around kind of individuals or small groups standing against giant hordes of enemies. So the fact that that's baked in here is something that I think a lot of people will really dig.
That, and as far as I can give you an example. So you know how in D&D, pretty much any edition, Fireball works the following way. You pick, the caster picks an area, right, within range, and then every creature in that area rolls a save, mm-hmm. and then the caster rolls damage dice, and creatures who make the save take half. Does sound familiar?
Yep.
Cool. So our fireball is an attack roll on the part of the caster. This does two things. It lets you compare one random number, the attack roll, with a bunch of hard numbers, which is to say it resolves quicker. For the DM and the player, because the DM can say, hey, this is the attack roll I got. Or the player can say, hey, I hit a 13 or whatever it might be. Then you can know who got hit, who didn't get hit immediately. And the fireball does half damage on a miss. Mm-hmm. But also, the caster can crit. And in our game system, you crit on a natural 12. And so we've almost doubled the odds of critical hits, which both speeds up the game, makes it more exciting, but also allowed us to embed in our weapons weapon properties that help the weapons perform the way they should historically. Mm-hmm. So, for example, stunning or penetrating effects or extra damage or these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a big thing that I enjoy. When games actually kind of go the extra mile, and what we're looking at here on the screen, for those of you who are listening rather than watching, we have kind of the melee weapons table pulled up here, because as DM Blackwell mentioned, you've made it kind of a priority to make these weapons function as they would. I was actually having a conversation with one of my friends the other day, and he was talking about how infuriating it is that when you get down to it, in a lot of games, a spear and a short sword are functionally the exact same thing. They both deal essentially the same damage. And when all kind of a weapon's function is wrapped up in the damage that it does, you really kind of, at that point, turn a weapon into window dressing. And
oh, exactly.
Weapon choice should be so much more than that.
Exactly. So if you look, I believe you've got the poleaxe pulled up, like third or fourth down from the top. Mm-hmm. You'll see that's got the heavy and penetrating property.
Yep.
Yeah. So what that means is if you crit, if you roll a natural 12, you do an extra die of damage and your attack ignores their armor. So in our game system, your armor actually protects you from damage, lets you take half damage from those types that it guards you from. If you scroll up a couple pages, you'll see example armor, actually. Mm-hmm. There you go. And so pick any one of them and read what it says.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's look at plate mail.
1,500
marks, bulky item, heavy armor, defense 10, protection, blunt, piercing, and slashing damage.
Right, so it protects you from all the physical damage types. But it doesn't do jack against fire or lightning.
Right.
Or cold, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And so you're still harder to hit, that defense number. But if they do hit you, you're vulnerable to those kind of elemental damages. So a knight is great fighting against other melee combatants, but is maybe not so great against a wizard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Jonathan Frost here in chat raises a good point. He says he'd love to see an example of play and character creation. Have you guys recorded any of that stuff for people to see? And if so, where can they find it?
Well, as far as that goes, example of play, I regularly do online test games. So anyone who wants to do that, you can actually play with me. Send me an email and we'll set something up. It might be a few weeks or a month because I have other things I'm doing. But I'm happy to, when I have enough people interested, organize a one-shot and actually run you through the game. Character creation, that's pretty straightforward. It really depends on how decisive you are, Ryan. If you wanted to, we could decide that, or we could do it now.
Yeah, sure. I mean, here, I've got a character sheet right here. Not sure.
So if you look, there will be, see the chapter headings?
Yep.
So there should be something about character creation.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, character creation. There we go.
So, first step.
Pick your species.
Yep. You got 5 to pick from.
Gotcha.
Let's see, where are the... You see them.
You said scroll down?
Yep, to see scroll them? Down and you'll see them.
Gotcha.
Yep, keep going. There you go.
There we are, species. So you've got human, dwarf, elf, halfling, orc, and I mean, those are good options right there. I like to kind of go against the grain and choose the option that people always ignore. So I'm going to go with a human.
Human's actually quite popular in our system. But all right. So you picked human. What does it say that human gets? So you'd write all this down on your character sheet, right?
Yep. So you get to assign 6 attribute points. You can have a maximum of 4 in any one attribute. Attribute points gained after character creation can exceed these maximums. And to start off, it looks like starting with 0 in fitness, reflexes, senses, and willpower.
Right. So you've got 6 points to assign, so you would do that.
Yep. Cool. So
I would say the most popular choice is a 3-3 split, mm-hmm. based on just watching people play.
Yep.
But put them however you like.
Yeah. I am going to... You know, I'll do 3 in fitness. I will do 1 in senses, and I'll do 2 in reflexes.
Cool. So you would write that down. Otherwise, if you want, I can send you I don't know. Do you have a PDF editor?
Instead of doing that, I'm just going to go ahead and pull up a document so I can write all this down.
Oh yeah, easy enough.
All right, so. Fitness, we have a 3.
Yep.
Reflexes, I took a 2. I took a 1 in senses.
Yep.
And I took nothing in willpower.
Exactly.
All right.
And then you have a base land speed of 6 combat spaces. Now, in our game system, we do explain a combat space is basically 2 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So you would note that speed on the character sheet. On the character sheet itself, it's in the upper right corner. Mm-hmm. You'd get your 2 languages, which would go in the bottom left corner of the first page.
Gotcha.
And you'd begin play with 2 fighting styles, one of which would be natural weapons, and another one of your choice, which would go in the bottom right corner of your character sheet.
Gotcha.
You also get a feature of your choice for which you meet the prereqs, but we can worry about that later.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, going back up here to character creations and looking at the fighting styles, axes, bows, clubs, crossbows, exotic hammers, improvised weapons. So natural weapons, you said, was 1 that you get automatically. And then for the sake of simplicity and because I love them so much, I will go with swords as my 2nd fighting style.
Perfect. And then you also start with 2 languages. Now, we do generally recommend that you pick the a language you can share with your party or starting area, but you don't have to.
Gotcha. So languages.
Now, if you
is Brig Mari like
care
the,
about it?
Sorry, go ahead.
If you do care about it, there is like lore information about those languages under the language skill in Chapter 5. But gotcha. For now, most of the ones with a funny sounding name are human languages.
Gotcha.
As a general rule.
Okay. Gotcha. So yeah, we'll go Mari because it's first, and then after that, I am always a fan of being able to speak Dwarvish, so Dwarven.
Cool. So you finished step one. Step two, calculate your hit points.
All right, 18 plus fitness attribute. My fitness is a 3, so that gives me 21 HP.
You got it. And then next step, you choose your two careers. So this is a little unlike D&D or Pathfinder, or it's a little like Traveler in this regard, that you could have more than one career. In this case, that's the default.
Gotcha.
So you basically are picking two classes. Okay. And you get these two careers, and you get all of the starting benefits of both. So these will determine your starting skills, your starting abilities, and will determine you'll get one of the two options of starting equipment from your starting careers. So gotcha. You like swords. So I'll give you an example. Blademaster, which would be just down a little bit. Yeah, you found it.
Yeah, Blademaster. So yeah, this one, Courtier. You gain influence as a bonus skill. In addition, you double your influence skill on skill checks made to gain access to social functions, political events, and higher levels of society. Backslash, when you make a melee weapon attack, you may use a backslash to make an additional attack with that weapon, and lightning reflexes as a maneuver. Whenever you would be hit by an attack, instead you block it with your melee weapon, causing the attack to miss. This kind of reminds me, and I can't remember the name of the game, but there's a samurai-focused role-playing game that has essentially one of the clans that you can play focuses on dueling. And so this Blademaster sounds kind of like almost a duelist class.
It is. It is. And in our game system, you have your movement and an action you can take on your turn. Mm-hmm. And then you have one maneuver you can take at any point during that round of play, unless the maneuver specifies otherwise. So for example, backslash, you can only really do on your own turn because you have to have already attacked.
Mm-hmm.
But lightning reflexes, you could, if you saved your maneuver, you could do whenever to block an incoming attack.
Gotcha.
So cool.
And then, sorry.
So you're picking pairs of these, right? So
yep.
Two together to make your character.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want something a little bit more, you might enjoy the Crusader actually.
Yeah, I was about to say I want to get a little spicy here, so I'm going to go with Crusader. Deus Vault. And now this one, it definitely looks a bit more like kind of a paladin type stand-in, which.
Oh yeah, paladin is a French word from history, so we use that word to describe its special ability for armor.
Mm-hmm. So whenever you wear heavy armor, your armor absorbs the first damage that you would take from an attack each round. Damn, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Nice.
And so on the back of your character sheet, you would see that there is a spot for passive abilities, which the Paladin Absorption is a passive ability.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a spot for maneuvers and a spot for special actions. And so the Crusader career begins with two passive abilities, the Paladin and Dawnblade abilities, and one special maneuver, the Cleave.
Mm. Gotcha. So if I had to pick You said you get all of the starting abilities and then one starting equipment, correct?
Right. So you get all the starting abilities and then you get the starting equipment of one of your two careers.
Gotcha. So I think I would start with the Crusader equipment.
Well, you might want to pick your other career unless you pick Blade Master with it.
Yeah, already. I pick Blade Master as my first one.
Okay. So you're a Blade Master Crusader.
Yep.
Going with the Crusader equipment. And then all you would do, it tells you what you start with. It pre-calculates your carry weight. Mm-hmm. So you'd write all that stuff on the back of your character sheet initially. So you've got it all written down. There's a spot for money separately, which is your 5 crowns and 10 marks. And then once you've got that written down, you jump right back to character creation, go to the next step, and assign your skills. And so those skills were just in the careers we were looking at. Mm-hmm. And so the Blade Master would give you influence, art and culture, combat, and a bonus skill of your choice. Any of the skills you're trained in, you get a +2 to start with.
Gotcha.
And so you'd put a +2 by art and culture, +2 by combat, +2 by influence, and you got one of your choice. And then you go down to Crusader, you'd have another +2 by faith, another skill of your choice. And because you gain combat a second time, you would get a third skill of your choice.
Cool.
So you should wind up with a total of 7 trained skills, each of which has a +2 in it.
Hmm. Gotcha.
So let me know when you've got those.
All right, so character creation. And you said I had art and culture.
Yep, influence. You've got art and culture, combat, influence, mm-hmm. faith, and then 3 skills of your choice.
All right, so I would go with history and law.
Yep.
Intuition.
Yep.
And let's see.
And if you're ever wondering what they do, you can always go to the skills chapter and scroll to the relevant skill that mm-hmm. you're wondering about.
Yep. So let's see. The one that I am wondering about, past history and law. You know, I think I'll go with language.
Cool. Now, because you've picked language and because you've picked combat, you now have additional languages and fighting styles that you know.
Okay.
The bonus is the bonus you just wrote down. So you have a +2 in language. Mm-hmm. You get 2 more languages beyond your starting languages.
Gotcha.
Same for the fighting styles. You started with 2. You have a +2 because you're trained in combat. And mm-hmm. as those numbers improve, as you get to higher level play, you get more fighting styles or get more languages.
Gotcha. So I now speak Elven and the Old Tongue.
Nice. And that's a stand-in for Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Just if that's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then... you would then, after you've gotten all your starting equipment written down on the back of your sheet, you keep going with your character creation, and you've got your skills assigned. You've assigned your additional fighting styles and languages. Do you have, yeah, what other fighting styles do you want to know?
Let's see, fighting styles, I will go with hammer.
Yep.
And shield.
Actually, you might want to go with, and let me quick look, I believe you might have a dagger.
Oh, that's right. I do have a dagger.
Knives.
That is a good point. Knives.
All right. And then we've got your starting equipment chosen. We would go through and look at the specifics, and we can in a moment if you want, but we just know what pack you have, which is the Crusader pack to start with.
Mm-hmm.
We then calculate your carrying capacity, which is 8 plus your fitness.
Yep.
So right now you probably have 11.
Yep.
And the Crusader equipment weighs 10 of the 11. However, it gives you a bonus for carrying capacity with its bandolier and belt pouch. Mm-hmm. So you actually have 10 out of 15.
Gotcha.
And then the last thing you have to do is pick a feature. And you'll have to pick two because you're a human. I said we'd go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see there's a chapter called Features. Yep, you're in it. And since you are a combat guy who has a pretty good fitness, one option that you might like is Vigor.
There we go. Gain disease immunity. In addition, whenever you would fail a fitness check, you may choose to succeed instead. That sounds good to me.
Yep, and that ability can be used once per day.
Gotcha.
Another one that you might enjoy just as an option is Position of Privilege. You basically start as a member of a noble family.
And that actually makes a lot of sense with kind of what I've set up here, so... Position of Privilege.
Yep. And what that does for you is you start play with an extra 50 crowns, which when you go to your when you go to the equipment, that's quite a lot of money. It's enough to buy more than one toolkit. It's enough to buy a decent weapon. Like it's a good amount of additional starting money.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing Position of Privilege does for you, in addition to being part of an established noble house, you get a perk. So if you go right back to character creation, scroll down to the next page, to page 15, you will see a list of perk choices. And you gain perks naturally at every even level.
Gotcha. So I am going to say heavy hitter, and I will choose... swords for my heavy hitter fighting style.
Absolutely. So when you hit somebody with your sword, you do your D10 or D12 plus 2 on a hit.
Nice.
And then in terms of equipment, you actually have enough money, I believe. Yeah. You have enough money if you wanted to purchase a silver longsword right out the gate.
Okay.
So a longsword baseline is 50 marks.
Mm-hmm.
And a silver longsword, or you could get black iron or bronze, is 10 times that price, which would be 50 crowns.
Gotcha.
But basically, you have enough money to buy a weapon that does an extra die of damage against monsters or against other characters if you wanted to fight against, do a bit more... political game, maybe.
Gotcha.
Whereas other characters are going to have to earn their way to that.
Sweet.
Or you could, buy some toolkits or poisons or extra healing potions or whatever. Gotcha. Got some options. Whetstone is a very underutilized option as well.
There it is. Then an hour of labor, a whetstone can be used on a personal weapon, granting a +1 equipment bonus on attack rolls for the next day. Yeah, that's a pretty cool feature. It's one of those things, like you see it in, a game like The Witcher. You have items like that, but it's something I don't think you see often enough in tabletop games.
Oh, I agree. And so we tried to put like a lot of cool little things that the players, as they gained some system mastery or as they found cool stuff that they could that they could enjoy. And then if you want to have a look at the treasure section, because you've built your character, it's done.
Yep.
Right. So it's pretty fast. I think, what did that take us? 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
And your character would be ready to play. Mm-hmm. But if you jump into treasure, and scroll down a bit, you'll see all these generating tables, like on page 148, 149,
Yep.
150. My test players, once they figured out how the table works, actually are now excited to find rugs and wall hangings. Because if you look, the way we've written that, we can generate 1,600 plus different pieces of artwork descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get to find something new. And often we use that to tell a story about the place that they've just raided or looted.
Mm-hmm.
And then the advanced game will have a bunch more magic scrolls. This is just the basic magic plus a few advanced spells thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have roughly double to triple the number of magic scroll options when you get advanced. And then if you look at the artifact weapons on page 154, this table is built to generate, I think, over 10,000 unique artifact weapons.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a big fan of tables. I've recently discovered that about myself. I love me a good table. And I think tables are often vilified. And so I like that this is something you've included in your game, especially with, you know, that many possibilities.
Thanks. And then for the guy who needs something quick, if you scroll down, you'll find four sample weapons. Also, it helps you know if you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
And then under that, we've also got the general artifacts table. So our plan is to have about double this amount of artifacts in the advanced game. But right here, you've got 85 unique artifacts that are individually tailored to do specific things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can either... If like your players specifically found clothing, you can just roll a d20 in that column. Or if you want to go full random, you'd roll a d4 to determine the column and a d20 to determine the row.
Nice.
And then what all those things are detailed on the following pages.
Yep.
We also include a sample adventure. So if you scroll to page 167.
Goblins Attack.
I have run this adventure probably 15 or more times now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be running it at a convention this weekend, which is Grand Con in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We'll also be running it at Big Geek Con on September 22 and 23. We're also running other adventures as well. But if you want to see this adventure played, you can come and play with us there if you want. And Basic Expert actually did the map, which is the second page of that adventure.
There we go.
And yeah, I think it's a really fun opening adventure. Takes about 2 hours, three if your players are a little indecisive.
Gotcha.
And I've never had it end the same way. And I've run the thing like 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. I'm happy that it has a degree of replayability.
Absolutely.
And then after that, you have a sample village with four major buildings, like shops and that kind of thing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Surrounding points of interest and some traveling merchants as well. So basically, we have enough to get you started. We have a starting area for you to begin play in. And then you can build out your own world from there if you want. Otherwise, we intend to have a full setting section in advanced. We also include some setting information here and in the skills, but as much as possible, we have embedded the setting information throughout the game. So for example, if you play a crusader, you know stuff about actual like NPC crusaders who you run into.
Mm-hmm.
They start out with the same abilities you have. They also would worship the same deity in this case that mm-hmm. you would, because the Crusaders are a specific religious group.
Yep.
And so on. Anyway, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you've created something here that's very easy to get started with and, you know, pretty intuitive to pick up. And one thing I want to go back to, just you know, looking at some of the, looking at some of the careers that you have here, specifically, you know, with the Blade Master and the Crusader that we looked at here, there's stuff built in to these careers. I can already see that allows for this kind of horde-based combat, which is a big deal. And I know that's what you kind of built the game around, but you know, this is something that I've been really wanting to see in a lot of things. I know Alex McCreese recently did a video where he talked about the linear fighter quadratic wizard problem. And I feel like in this game, you don't have that because you have from the get-go a couple options for warriors who are ready to essentially, you know, run into combat and fight multiple people at once.
Oh, there's even more. Look at the knight and the Viking.
Gotcha. Let's go down to the, I think we've passed the knight, so let's go on down to the Viking here. And we look at, let's see. Berserk maneuver, you gain damage reduction 2 for the next minute. All damage that we've been dealt to you is reduced by that amount. Oarsmen, you gain sailing as a skill bonus.
Read unarmored warrior.
Extra die of damage on melee weapon attacks if you were not wearing heavy armor while going berserk. Nice.
Yeah. You can wear light armor though.
Mm-hmm.
Our players seem to really enjoy the Viking, our playtesters. Almost every group has a warlord, which has been interesting to see because I don't see that in a lot of other role-playing games, but they actually like having that commander type character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one. I know this was a class, like people talk a lot about how much they hate fourth edition D&D,
but
whenever they talk about fourth edition and the stuff that they like, the warlord class in that game is usually brought up, and it kind of amazes me that no one else has like picked up that ball and run with it except for, you know, a few games here or there. But it's cool that you've included that style of play here.
Thanks. And then something cool, something you might enjoy is if you look at the wizards, pick any two.
Gotcha.
So under W.
I'm going the wrong way. Brown wizard, Radagast.
Yep. Sort of. So there are 5 varieties of wizard, and they determine your starting spell lists.
Gotcha.
And you can pair them up.
Mm-hmm.
But this gives you information about the game world. Like, there are orders of wizards that are just brown wizards.
Yep.
So if you are playing a brown wizard, you know stuff about the order by looking at your own character sheet.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. It looks like brown wizards are kind of that druid type wizard. To a degree.
Yep.
And then look at a red wizard. Looks like the red wizard is kind of more of the evoker type wizard.
Oh, yeah. Starts with fireball and haste.
So, yeah. Again, this is... it's interesting to see stuff like this. I like how these characters start out with, you know, essentially this is like they're built around a play style. Instead of expecting a player to kind of make choices, you've kind of just built out kits for them already where, you know, okay, you want to play a fighter who, you know, goes berserk, you play the Viking. You want to play a, you know, a wizard who focuses on evoking, you play a red wizard. And then if you want to, you know, like mix those things, you know, you want to be a gray wizard and a red wizard combined, you know, you have the option and you have kind of, you know, the combination of the two. I like this. And it's a better way to do multi-classing, I think.
Thanks. And the thing that you won't see in this, because this is basic, so this is levels 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. In advanced, Each of these careers would take a full page. And that's because they add something called capstones, where when you hit level 5 and level 9, you get to pick one of the capstones offered by your careers or one of the ones offered by your species. You can level up in your species, actually.
Gotcha.
And so this gives you 5 divergent paths, 1 from the species, 2 from each career, of, in the case of the wizards, higher level spells. So stuff like Flame Gate or Firestorm or that kind of thing. And so you can become even more specialized with the advanced version, which we're hoping to have Hordor's advanced out within the next 12 to 18 months. It's largely depending on artwork. Mm-hmm. And then we're waiting to see how much interest there is in Horde Wars Basics, so we know how much of a print run to do for advanced.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they are fully compatible. Everything that you have in Horde Wars Basic, you can level right up into advanced without any problems. There's none of the shenanigans at TSR from back in the 80s. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Now, if we go into monsters, the big question I have related to monsters, again, with the idea that this game is based around fighting hordes.
Yeah.
How does that shake out in monster design? Do you have enemies that are basically like minion types, again, to kind of reference fourth edition?
Oh, sure.
How did you guys go about designing monsters that are easy for GMs to run in large quantities?
Well, if you want some examples of those, pick a somewhat common monster type like a goblin or a skeleton or a zombie or that sort of thing.
All right, let's go on down to here are goblins.
Perfect. So let me scroll to that on my screen a second. All right, so goblins. Now that we have some additional goblin stat blocks, but here you'll see a goblin cannibal as the kind of basic goblin. And look, quick read its traits and stuff a second.
Gotcha. So traits, you have goblin greed. You must move toward any treasure you can see with a close range, unless you succeed a DC 10 willpower check.
Yep, and these are all phrased as if you're the character or the goblin. Gotcha. So in this case, you is the goblin because you're the game master playing the goblin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the players, like as soon as they figure out goblins are hilariously greedy, they'll do stuff like throw coins down a well just to kill goblins. which I found out the fun way. So you compare that, you could have dozens of goblin cannibals fighting a party, and they are a threat.
Mm-hmm.
That dagger particularly.
Yep.
Lets them potentially punch out of their weight class. Max yep. damage crit, they could nail you for 24 damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially if they get the drop on you because it says extra die of damage during the first round of combat. So at that point, you're looking at 2d6 with a minimum of 2 damage. And I mean, I had a particularly high HP because of my fitness at 21, but I imagine not everyone is going to have that.
Right.
So, I mean, even, let's say a goblin rolls boxcars on me, that's over half my hit points gone in one round.
Right, unless you block or unless you have armor that protects you from that damage type, which in which case you take half. There are ways around this problem, or like yep. your absorption ability for the Crusader. That first hit wouldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, that would hurt you. Yep. And then if you... And by the way, Jonathan, you're welcome. But then if you look at the Goblin Warrior and Goblin Sneak, these are both an advanced version of the Goblin Cannibal.
Mm-hmm.
But with divergent fighting styles.
Yep. Yep, so the Goblin Warrior has an increased crit range, which is nasty. And then Goblin Sneak, this time you're looking at dealing with ranged weapons as well. And then also Shadow Stalker, you can attempt to hide or move silently as a maneuver. So at this point, you're dealing with goblins in the shadows.
Right. And so he can actually hide off turn or reactively.
Yep.
And then you scroll down a little bit and you'll find the next kind of level up, which is the Goblin Taskmaster or the Goblin Sorcerer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this time with Goblin Taskmaster, you are looking at kind of more of those command actions as well. So you have a little bit of a controller here.
Also read what Flayed says.
See, Flay, when you damage a creature with a melee weapon attack, you may use Flay to give him a level of affliction.
So what that does is you have to have damaged the opponent in the first place, but a level of affliction means instead of rolling a d12 for everything, you roll a d10.
Ooh.
Or instead of rolling a d10, you roll a d8. You can get multiple levels of affliction. And this is one of the ways that we show curses and exhaustion.
Gotcha. Almost a... kind of similar to the way that like Dungeon Crawl Classics does the dice chain in a lot of ways. That's again, another underutilized mechanic that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, it plays really well going from a D12 down instead of D20 because the jump isn't big.
Right.
D12, D10, D8, D6. Each jump isn't huge.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that you can't crit basically if, you even have one level of affliction. You're too tired to crit.
Absolutely.
So he's a controller, but also a debuffer.
Yeah.
And then check out the Goblin Sorcerer.
So yeah, the first attack that would hit you each round misses instead. Nice little displacer beast type maneuver there. And then let's see, Magic Mirror. Specific location anywhere in the world, such as the Black Lion Inn. You get a vision of the target, so you can scry on people. Freeze Ray is 4d8 cold damage applied to each target in the line, and miss for half. And then Flare, two attacks against targets within close range for 2d6 fire damage, and also an increased crit range. So that's pretty nasty.
Yeah. And then if you scroll down one more page, you'll find a Goblin King. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a named Goblin King in Advanced who's got even more cool stuff. But here's the basic Goblin King.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, he can shove people in front of him, take damage for him. That's pretty great. Interrogation, a creature of your choice within close range must succeed on a DC 10 willpower check, or he will answer up to 4 yes or no questions truthfully. If you're below your maximum hit points, you deal an extra die of damage on all attacks. Oh, God.
Yeah, you don't want to just wound the Goblin King. You want to kill him.
Yeah.
Do you see the guard's ability?
Let's see. Guard... Am I going the right way here?
No, oh, no, I'm the Goblin King.
Gotcha.
On the right.
Okay, guard. Yeah, 4 allied goblin warriors join the battle, arriving in combat spaces of your choice within close range. Nice.
So he can literally summon allies, in effect.
Yeah.
And then you got a piece of artwork there of a Goblin King.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully that helps answer your question, just with a picture with the goblins of kind of how we're scaling up the creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so you can have massive numbers of goblins. You just might not want to have massive numbers of Goblin Kings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even the little guys can really be a threat.
Mm-hmm.
One other cool thing that you might enjoy or... maybe looking at, let me see here. I might have gone too far in my scrolling. I did. If you go to the Lich, that's page 103. You want to scroll down?
Yeah. Helps if you know your alphabet.
It does. So this has the fully written out spells of his entire spell book on a single page for reference.
Yep.
We did the same thing in advance for the Archlich. And this is so that this is something that always annoyed me when I was playing a bunch of other role-playing games, actually, that they wouldn't write out the abilities so that you could run the monster off that page.
Right.
And so go ahead.
Oh, just it's always a pain to have to like go back and reference spells like one at a time as you want to use them. Yeah, we all like to think in a perfect world you would have a general idea of what each spell does. The fact of the matter is nobody has the entirety of every single spell offered in any game memorized. So having some kind of reference, or even if you're not doing the full text of the spell, just the basics of what you need to know with the monster is that's a great resource to have.
Thanks. And we did that. We tried to do that everywhere. And then one other thing you might not have noticed when you scrolled past them. If you look at one of the dragons, any of them, I think we've got four in this book. I think we'll have 9 individual dragons in advanced.
So here we are. Torvek, sure. The Earthshaker.
Cool. So have a look at that stat block and let me know what you think. Now, he is meant to fight a party by himself. And he should completely wipe level 1 to 4 characters. He's in there as a probably unbeatable dragon, although I have seen a party of third or fourth level characters beat one.
And DC 14 in a D12 game, that's pretty brutal.
Yep. His roar is nasty. Also, look at his damage output on that breath.
Yep, damage output on Thunder Breath, 7d8 sonic damage. Nice.
Even his claw attacks, like one hit with a claw, could potentially kill that starting character.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you look, unlike a lot of the monsters, he's got 2 actions.
Yep.
And I don't know if you ever saw Meta Breath from 3rd edition D&D.
No.
But this was special abilities for dragons. Our dragons each have one of those kinds of abilities where they can make their breath even worse for you in some way with a maneuver.
Gotcha. So yeah, the Booming Breath, in addition to the Thunder Breath, that's... Ooh. Knock back 6 combat spaces.
Or 12 yards.
Yep.
And check out Armored Hide in the traits.
Armored Hide, let's see. So yeah, that one, you similar to the Crusader's ability, you absorb the first damage that you would take from an attack each round.
Yep. And then he's got that blood rage thing.
Yep.
And each dragon has unique traits as well. He's got stone blend, where he basically, if he holds still long enough, he will look like he's a rock. And then thunder aura.
Adjacent targets take 4 sonic damage, man. So to take this thing out, you'd have to basically advance and then retreat as best you could, if at all possible, to avoid getting taken out by this thing just by the sonic damage alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you scroll up and look at some of the other dragons, basically they each have their own unique abilities, but they're themed similarly. So like we have one who's like electric themed, one who's fire themed, one who's cold themed in this book as well. In the upcoming book, we've also got like a multi-headed dragon or a shadow themed one or this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the other 3 dragons are the less powerful ones than Torvek the Earthshaker. But even them, it's rough.
Yeah. Even if we look at Bardock the Stormbringer Dragon.
Yep.
8 defense and 240 hit points versus what we were dealing with 10 defense and 360 hit points. Yep. But even still, that's a tall order for a low-level party.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, I've actually seen, I think it was a second-level party, kill one of the 240 hit point dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was a 5 or 6 man party, and they were experienced gamers.
Yeah.
And even then, I think one of them, one or two of them died permanently. And then one got dropped and was they recovered him, that sort of thing. So it's a deadly fight, but it's possible.
Yeah.
And anyway, so hopefully that did you get most of your kind of questions answered or things you were wondering about for the system?
Yeah. And it seems like you've successfully made a game that has kind of this arcadey feel to combat. And that's a thing that a lot of role-playing games haven't been able to successfully pull off, is that that same feeling you get from combat in something like Dark Souls or something like Dynasty Warriors,
yes,
where you have either something that's big and colossal attacking you, or you have, like large hordes coming at you. I really kind of, I enjoy the feel of combat in this game from what I've seen so far. And I'm actually really looking forward to being able to play this just so I can see how it feels actually from a gameplay perspective.
Yeah, that'd be great. I hope that we can arrange that soon. Like I said, October on is pretty good for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, is there anything else that you think people in chat or in general, like audience wise, would want to know?
Well, kind of moving away from the game side of things and into like distribution and kind of the decisions you've made as far as production of this game. Right now, we're looking at PDF only. Is that correct?
That's correct. Basic is intended to be PDF only, and we're selling it very cheap. It's $5 for a 194-page rulebook.
Gotcha.
Right now,
it's exclusively available on Big Geek Emporium, right?
That's correct. We will probably add it to a couple other websites, but those websites, it will be sold for more on. It'll be probably $7 to $10 there, in part because a lot of other websites charge a higher margin.
Mm-hmm.
And in part because we actually know the guys who run Big Geek Emporium. We've met them in person. We've gamed with them. And but in general, the intent here is online distribution PDF for basic, and then use that to gauge how big of a print run that we should do for advanced. Advanced would have about double the length, be about 360 pages, and have a approximately equal or greater amount of content than all three core books that you'd get from a Pathfinder or D&D, modern D&D game. And that's partly because we've organized the content. We've organized the content in such a way that we can compress far more information on a page.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in this version, basic, our classes take half a page, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our careers. If you plopped open a fifth edition player's handbook, you'd see that those classes take 4 pages.
Right.
So we're able to have a lot more content and a lot less space.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at these careers, you're not really sacrificing anything by, doing this. Like, you just take a look at the archer. You have a 1 or 1 to 2 sentence description of what an archer is. You spent years hunting and fighting with bows and crossbows. And then, skills, few, abilities, starting equipment, and that's about it. And that's really all you need.
Yep.
Especially, in this game, you aren't taking up space with the like level up chart. Leveling up seems like it's pretty straightforward, and it also seems like it's something that's covered in more depth in Advanced.
You will find level up information in character creation, just the second page there. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to go past level 4, then you'd want to go to Advanced. And then Advanced includes the capstones, which have additional abilities for all the careers. That's all been written, play tested. We're basically just waiting on art. And then probably me, maybe one other guy, to do the layout.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do the layout for this one, and that's not my area of expertise, but I think it came out all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a very it's a very functional and a very easy to read layout. It's definitely, I'd say, a good starting point, especially just to get people playing the game. And you know, there are games that have you know, kind of like fancy tricks that they do with their layouts, and then there are games that are easier to read. And I would much rather you know, maybe it's not as flashy, but this is a whole lot easier to parse for me, or for, you know, if I put this down in front of a new player, then, you know, handing someone Morkborg and saying, all right, try to read this.
Yeah. Yeah. The intent is very much to increase readability. And also though, in terms of like page layout, I wanted to make sure all the information about a thing as much as possible was on the same page or same pair of pages.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're not just having to scroll all over the place during gameplay. And then we've also tried to embed information. So one spot you could look is if you go to the skills chapter, that first page under mm-hmm. art and culture, you will see right there a table that includes common festivals in the world.
Yeah.
Right. That's all embedded because that's a thing someone who is at all familiar with art and culture would know.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you scroll down a little bit more, astronomy, you've got astronomical events for the world.
Yeah.
And so if you have a player who cares about this, or you have a game master who's really excited about having terrifying symbols in the sky, all they got to do is go to that skill and they'll find the information.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's just an effort to make this as playable as possible.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a big selling point for people, because one of the things that keeps people from playing new games is now I have to go through and read a whole rule book and find everything and find, you know, where to reference things. I'm running into this right now, playing Castles and Crusades regularly for the first time. Still, you know, Castles and Crusades is a good system, but it's a book that, as someone who has mostly played D&D 5th edition for his whole life, I'm now having to relearn where everything is in the book. In a game like this, you don't have as much of a problem because one, it's short, but two, everything's together. Everything that needs to be kind of referenced at the same time is on the same page. So I think that's a big hurdle that you've overcome in getting people to appreciate the game and actually give it the time required to actually dig in and play.
Thanks. Yeah. Advanced though, we'll also be offering as a PDF. It'll probably be $15 or $20 for that one. Partly because it's going to cost us several thousand more to make.
Yep.
And then also we're looking to do a print run, and pretty much our sales of Basic will help us determine how large of a print run to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who does purchase our game for the Horde Wars Basic, you are more than welcome to print off a single copy of your own for personal use from the PDF. We have no objection to that at all.
Awesome.
Sell it and pretend it's yours. We have an objection.
Yes. Yeah. Don't sell other people's PDFs, people.
Yeah. But and I know a few guys who have done that. And in fact, Nate, my co-author, he and I are probably going to do a dozen or so ourselves.
Gotcha.
For tournament play and that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, this is, you know, for anyone who's interested, it's here in chat, the place to find it on Big Geek Emporium. It'll be in the pinned comment as well for those of you who are interested in seeing it. I will go ahead and show everyone this is the page that you're looking for, Horde Wars Basic on Big Geek Emporium. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of where you guys take this, especially once, you know, Advanced is ready. Because this is a really cool game, and I'm glad that a game like this exists out there and that it's done in such a kind of a utilitarian fashion that makes it, you know, less daunting for people who just want to jump into this style of play.
Thanks. Yeah, we were really inspired by the Rules Cyclopedia, actually, which is an old kind of compilation of a single edition of D&D into one book.
Yep.
And they had to make some real, let's just say, creative editing choices to make that fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I was like, well, if they could do that, we could probably design our game where we can just fit all the things in one book. We could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, we are working on a superhero game. Don't have a name for it yet. Playtesting started in the last couple of weeks. It uses a similar game engine, but has a few substantial rule changes because of the change in genre, of course.
Yeah. Cool. Well, guys, that is Horde Wars Basic. And as we're kind of running up against our time here, that is going to be it for tonight's episode of Rollin' Bones. So aside from Big Geek Emporium, which obviously, you know, we want people to go there and purchase this game, where else should people go if they want, you know, updates on what you're working on, or if they want to interact with what you've got going on here?
Sure. So other than so one, I can be reached on Twitter or X, as Elon Musk insists on calling it. and so that is at @DM_Blackwall. I can also be reached at the email I had shared with you, which is hordewars@blackwallgames.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially our, you know, social media or help email. So if you guys have questions about the game, or you want to try to arrange to play with us, or anything like that, you can contact us at that email. And other than that, a good way to get a hold of us is... and this is going to sound a little silly, is actually getting a hold of the various people that we interact with regularly online. Like I talk with you a fair amount, Basic Expert, Raven Wolfgar, a pile of people, really, all of whom are fully aware of how to get a hold of me directly.
Hmm. Absolutely.
In fact, one of them threatened to text me the other day. I hate texting.
Cool. Well, you know, DM Blackwall, thank you so much for coming on here. This has been a great conversation. I'm glad that we got to kind of go through character creation and show everyone just, you know, how easy it is to kick off a game in Horde Wars Basic.
Yeah, that was great. I'm glad you were up for that. And the decisiveness is important. If you have an indecisive group, use the precons in the back of the book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, guys, that is going to do it for Rollin' Bones this evening. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I hope you guys will go out and support DM Blackwall and the game that he has here. It seems pretty cool. And I hope some of you guys will you know, give it a shot, especially if you... have felt kind of a void in your gaming where you want more of that Berserk, Dynasty Warriors, Dark Souls feel to your combat. You know, this is definitely the way to go to recreate that feeling. So I hope you guys will support this. And next week, Roland Bones will be back. Not sure who we're going to be talking to or what we're going to be talking about, but we will be here next week, 8 p.m. Central, as always, right here on YouTube. So until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I am so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys next time.